Case study, going from 0 to 12 properties in a short amount of time. That's today's episode. Let's get right to it. Hey, everyone. Hello, Freedom Fighters. Welcome into the Investing in Real Estate show. I am Clayton Morris. I'm really excited about today's episode. We'll get to that in a second. But if you're new to the show, this is the show where we talk about passive income. And honestly, the main reason we talk about passive income is not for the money. It's not the bank account, because money comes and goes. It's about how do you live the life that you want, the lifestyle that you and your family choose to live. Are you tired of driving 2 hours every day to and from work? Are you tired of being worried about whether or not you can take off for the holidays for your family because you don't get enough time off of work? That's what this show is all about. It's about putting control back in your hands so you can live the life that you want. And the vehicle that we use to get there is buy and hold real estate. We buy it, we get great return on investment, and we hold it as an asset for the rest of our lives. My guest today is a case study episode because Jonathan Seashore has worked with us. He's been a longtime real estate investor, investing in Aurora, Colorado. He lives in Littleton, Colorado, but now has switched to the Midwest, and he's got a bunch of properties. We're going to talk about his journey, why he made the switch, and how are things going for him today. Hey, Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Clayton.
So I think this was actually your idea, right? We were talking on the phone a few weeks ago, and you said, you know, what did you say? You said, I've referenced so many people, I've told so many people about Morris Invest that they're asking me, when am I going to be on the show?
That's right. That's right. I've talked to a lot of people about Morris Invest and about what I've been up to for the last almost year or so.
And that's great. Well, welcome to the show. Thank you so much. So I know a little bit of your story, but just, you know, I think the everyman story, I hear this from our audience a lot. You know, it's great to have the Robert Kiyosakis on the show, people who have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of properties who have kind of achieved that dream, right? They own a house in France, all of those things. That's great. But what about the people that are just like me, you know, where maybe they're just starting, they're only a few years into this, they've got a few properties and they're thinking about taking and getting started. Why don't you, you know, paint a picture for us on sort of your life, how you got where you are now and how you decided to become a real estate investor?
Sure, sure. So I guess I've been married for about 10 years. In 2000, we bought a really big house in 2005, really nice house. My wife and I both work full time. And it was kind of against the Kiyosaki methodology. And so we had a huge house payment, but I wanted to reinvest in real estate. And so with the lending the way it was, we were able to make that happen. Even though we had a huge house payment, we were able to buy two investment properties in the Denver metro area in 2006 and 2007. I went on to manage both of those for a couple years, and they were a lot of work. Really? Managing contractors and managing tenants it's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a thankless job. So when you can hand it off to somebody else who can do it, it's quite a relief. It's quite a relief. So, and if folks are listening to this episode now, I take you back to episode 241 of our podcast, where Natalie and I talked about a conversation with a millionaire retired landlord, because you know, it can be a lot of work, and you're in your mid-70s, and you're like, you don't have a property management company, you're doing everything yourself. You're battling code enforcement, you're having to collect rent, you're having to do all of those things. It can be exhausting. So you had these, I want to unpack these two properties that you purchased then. Now, this is right before the crash. So what was Colorado like before the crash? Were we seeing like big appreciation on properties? Could you get in for like 100% financing? What did it look like?
So in 2005, things were pretty good. We bought our house 100% financed with the bank, conventional. Both my wife and I work full time, so it was easy to get that monster loan. It was easy to get a HELOC to further. So we had a HELOC on our house. So what we ended up doing is I ended up consulting enough money to pay down that HELOC, and then we used that HELOC on our house to buy our first property. So things were, by late 2006 and 2007, there was blood in the streets. It was kind of a scary time. There was Aurora was a rough part of town.
Yeah.
And so we went, we actually worked with a team of a couple of guys that helped us learn the ropes for how to rehab homes. So they helped us buy these first two homes, and they helped us rehab them both. And we learned a lot from the experience. However, I ended up being a landlord because the numbers didn't fully work. to cash flow. Like we were breaking even, if not feeding those two rentals for probably 7 or 8 years.
So you were breaking even at the time. Did you understand ROI the way that you do now? Like when we talk about it here on the podcast, we've got episodes devoted to, you know, understanding ROI and how to figure out if this is a smart investment. When you were looking and analyzing the numbers at the time, did that fully sink in?
No. And of course my plan was to keep buying these because it's all going to work out in the end. But in the end, I was just exhausted working full time and managing these properties, and I ended up having to get an extra consulting job on the side. Wow. So, and we had a new baby that same year. So I ended up getting
You're more than had your hands full. Holy smokes.
Yeah.
So you ended up what? I'm sorry, I interrupted.
I ended up being diagnosed with cancer at that time because I was managing those properties. I was driving all over town. I was commuting 90 minutes to work. I was just – there was nothing left to give in my life. And so that was my reality check that, look, something's got to change. You've got to use a management company at least. So that's what we did. After that, we ended up using a management company, but that didn't change that we were still feeding these rentals to keep them floating. They were floating about even, but you know, every now and then you've got a furnace or a water heater or something that just eats up all any reserves.
So now I think this is a classic example, and I'm just going to sort of look into my crystal ball and predict this. Now tell me if I'm totally wrong, because I hear this from investors all the time that'll say to me, hey, I've got these three properties in the Gulf Coast, you know, or along the East Coast of Florida. They're $250,000 homes and I have them rented, but I don't make any money off them. They're in A-class neighborhoods. And even in B-class neighborhoods, and every few months, I've got an air conditioner that's up. I've got to fix a garage door. We look at our numbers, and we're constantly kind of being eaten alive like sharks by these properties. Is that kind of what was happening with these properties for you?
Yeah, definitely. It was, you know, lawn violation, a tenant issue of some sort. And I was always disappointed at the bank balance of those two properties. We finally hit the 1% rule later on, maybe 8 or 9 years in, and the numbers started working in our favor, but not like Morris Invest numbers.
So I'm curious, I want to unpack these two properties a little bit more, because there's a lot of lessons here for listeners who, I hear it all the time, you know, it's somebody who, it's the house they bought with their wife, and then they move, and they hold on to this house. They're kind of breaking even on it. They don't even take into account sometimes the taxes that they're paying, right? And so that they may actually be losing money on this. Was this like describe the neighborhood for me, describe the type of property, describe the type of tenant, describe to me the square footage, you know, just be as detailed as you can. I think people could really take a lot from your lesson here.
Sure. So in Aurora, Colorado, that was our first property. It was a single family home. It was a 2-bed, 1-bath. We bought it for $68,000. We went in and it had a 1-car garage that was beginning to be converted into a 3rd bedroom. And so we completed that conversion. So we added a 3rd bedroom and an extra bathroom, a master bathroom. So we were all in at about $100,000 on that one in 2007.
So $32,000 in rehab amount. So about $100,000. What did you estimate the house was worth? Now, after you did that rehab, you're into it for about $100,000. How much would you think the house was worth?
I think the house was worth about $120,000 at the time.
Okay. Great. So you got a good deal. Then you went to the bank after that and got a home equity line of credit on it?
You know, the house was in good enough shape that it qualified for conventional financing. And so I ended up getting a 40-year loan on it at 6.5% interest on it.
Okay. So describe the tenants for me and the type of neighborhood this was.
So it was a rough neighborhood. It was not far from Fitzsimmons Medical Complex in Aurora. I didn't feel safe over there at night. I did not like going over there even during the day. It was definitely a transitional neighborhood, probably a C-, because I just didn't feel safe.
Well, I would say it might even be a D if you weren't even like feeling safe there during the day, you know, because I drive through my neighborhoods and my properties in the afternoon and everyone's at work, you know, and those are C-class neighborhoods. So if you felt uncomfortable there during the daytime, that might have been a D-class. You know, there are parts of like Newark, New Jersey, where you do not want to drive down there in the afternoon, even, you know, when there's daylight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so it was – I mean, I was kind of guessing that this might have been sort of an A-class neighborhood. But no, it was really you know, kind of a lower income area. And then you were – how far from your home and you were managing this property, kind of going back and forth? And what was that like trying to find tenants and screen tenants and all of that?
So it was about 50, 55 minutes from my house. A long way when you had a tenant issue to go handle.
Right.
What was your other question?
Oh, just how long did it take you to, you know, how long did it take you to screen the tenants, do all that stuff and show?
Yeah, so I ended up paying somebody to help me find the first tenants, and they took the first month's rent to do that. Now, this was in kind of a down economy at that time. So a whole month's rent to find tenants, and she did the background check and such. Yeah, so I used her to do that, and it felt expensive.
Yeah. Well, especially since you weren't really using a property management company. You were sort of, you know, you kind of were doing it yourself, but then you even realized, you know what, I need some help. I can't do this myself from 50 minutes away. Because the key is when you have like a property management company like the ones we work with in our different markets, they've got like 8 or 9 leasing agents. And they, guess what? They're out there and they all kind of battle. They get bonuses for finding great tenants and doing background checks, and they kind of battle each other. Two of the same leasing agents might be going over to 123 Main Street with a qualified tenant, and whoever gets there first and, like, you know, gets a deposit and gets it rented and shows a property 7 o'clock at night, that's their job. And for you to do it after you're working long hours, you have a baby, and then you're driving 50 minutes just to show a property, that's where things can start to fall apart.
And quickly, when I turned it over to a property management company after that tenant, I forget exactly, there might have been two tenants in there that I managed it directly. The property management leasing agent, there was gunshots in the street the first day he tried to show the property. The street was shut down, the whole thing. So I was grateful that somebody else was showing it at that point.
Wow. Yeah, we'd like to go down and take a left-hand turn onto Main Street here, but we can't because it's shut down because there are bullets that were fired.
Yeah, we'd like to rent the property.
Yeah, that's great. That's – oh, man, you had it all. Okay, so then take me – we got through that. We understand the tenants. Now, what did you do with those properties ultimately, and how did that – once they started becoming a little bit positive for you, you were still carrying – you were still carrying a note on the property, correct?
Yeah, yeah. So we ended up selling our nice house in 2014, and we had worked really hard to pay it down. So we had several $100,000 that we held to kind of help pay down these mortgages. The rentals were doing great, but still weren't cash flowing a ton. I think between the two properties, we were netting maybe $1,000 a month. And then I was turned on to Morris Invest, and I started doing the numbers and the Freedom numbers. And I thought, well, what would happen if I move this money to Indy? So specifics on my rental properties, we were getting in our Inglewood house, we were getting $2,200 a month for rent. And then the Aurora house, we were getting $1,100 a month. So we were getting about $3,300 gross for that. We went to sell the properties. We ended up doing a 1031 exchange on those two. We ended up with about $530,000. So one sold for $320 something and one sold for $220 something. So we had about $540,000. We rolled those two, all that money to Morris Invest via 1031 exchange. And on paper, the gross rents went from $3,300 in the Denver Metro to $9,500 in Indianapolis. And so those numbers, it was a no brainer. You don't have to think too hard when you're getting almost three times the gross rent.
Right. Yeah, and then you're also the other ancillary benefit of it being the 1031 exchange. So you're not paying taxes on that. It's deferred into this vehicle, this great investment vehicle. And you're not now managing the properties yourself.
I can't drive there. I can't go solve the problem.
Right. Right. And you've got to let to become like a hands-off investor. So talk about a little bit about that transition for you. And I know, you know, becoming, obviously, you were very hands-on dealing with these Aurora properties, then to just be able to like sort of turn that over and say, okay, I know there are problems that are going to come up. We're going to have evictions at some point. We're going to deal with code enforcement. We're going to deal with things that are out of my control. You know, there's going to be a leaky toilet at some point. but you know what? I'm not going to go fix it. I'm not going to get on the phone and call, you know, the plumber, Joe the plumber, to go fix it. Now it's out of my hands. Was it an easy transition for you, or is it something you're still working on? Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, the Morris Invest team makes it pretty easy to transition. You pick your property, you go under contract, you use their title agency to close, and I couldn't believe we could buy properties via, you know, via email and not actually go to Indy to do it. Talked to the insurance company, got insurance. Most of the first round of properties were rented before we even got them, so the rent checks started coming in immediately on most of them. It was really easy. When I rented properties, when I bought our two properties, I had to spend a lot of time on the phone getting, you know, the power and water utilities all hooked up and going. And with Morris Invest on the vacant properties, that was all done for me. Somebody else handled all that. I didn't have to manage any contractors. It just was truly turnkey. So you took a huge burden off of my shoulders to just handle it.
Well, that's very kind of you to say. That's our goal. And, you know, we're not perfect. So we, you know, when problems come up, we try to fix it. You know, we're all human beings. And that's why we say to people who are new investors, it's the one business, I think, and I've been done a lot of business. I'm sure you have as well. And we can talk about your day job. But, you know, it's the one business that I truly believe you can really fix anything. From every piece of it is fixable. You know, needs a roof? Great. Put on a new roof. You know, needs a new water heater? Great. Put another $700 water heater in the house. Get a bad tenant? Get an eviction a couple weeks later. Paint, carpet, touch up. Get a new tenant in there. You know, your bank is not working for you? Get a new bank. You know, so all of those pieces can be fixed. And in other businesses, very often it's not the case. And in very odd, like the stock market, for instance, I don't know how much you invest in the stock market. It's all out, you know, all out of your control. And the moods of the market can shift, and you have no control if you invest in Coca-Cola or offshore oil rigs or these types of things. You don't have any real control of that, and you can't really fix it at the end of the day. Today's episode is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. I'm a big fan of ZipRecruiter because, you know, we hire a lot of great people on our team here at Morris Invest. And so in our different offices around the country, for instance, in our Indianapolis office, we just opened and had to hire some great people out there. And what did we do? We posted on ZipRecruiter. And they knew that there was a smarter way to find great talent out there. So they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. I mean, it's hard to find. I mean, I'm telling you, you know, you just think you're going to post something on some random website and find great talent. You're not. Here's how ZipRecruiter works. They learn what you're looking for, and they identify the people with the right experience, and they invite them to apply for your job. These invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. That's what happened to me with a couple of the different positions that we were filling. We had a person that we were fulfilling to be on the phones. We had another clerical person on a team. It's fantastic. We had someone that was working with our violations department to handle those pieces for our clients. All of those things. When we hire the right people, you need to have the right talent, and they find it for you. ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive, so you never miss a great match. Your right candidates are out there, I'm telling you. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. I love them. That's how I will use them till the cows come home to grow our team here at Morris Invest. Right now, though, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, totally free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/investing to post your job. That's right, it's ZipRecruiter.com/investing. Once again, ZipRecruiter.com/investing. Now, I know there's a lot of you listening out there who run small businesses and you're hiring. I'm telling you, give ZipRecruiter a try to find the right candidate. Thanks, ZipRecruiter.
I want to say my first job out of college, I worked for 6 or 7 years, and I was able to save, you know, $100,000 worth of, in my 401k. And then we went into some massive recessions, and we came out back in... You know, then years later, it seemed like it just sort of hung around where it was when I left my first job in 2004, right? I couldn't make any progress. So I am disheartened with the stock market as well. And my wife and I prefer not to invest in 401ks anymore. It's more beneficial to us to put it into tangible real estate.
Talk about the way in which you purchase the property. So now you have what, 12, you have 12 properties with us. You did the 1031 exchange for a portion of them, I assume, or all of them? Did you 1031 exchange everything?
Yep.
Okay.
So both properties were 1031. We've got 9 single family homes and 3 duplexes. So there's 15 rentable doors.
Great, great. Is that a 1031 exchange person we hooked you up with? We have a person who's been a guest here on the show. That we referenced, but it was somebody you discovered on your own, and describe the 1031.
Yeah, I found them on my own.
Okay. Yep. Tell us about that process. What was the 1031 exchange process like for people who aren't familiar with what that is?
Well, you have to find somebody that knows what they're doing, because the rules are very rigid and you have to follow them to the T. So the 1031 exchange company that I used made it very straightforward and easy, and Morris Invest was, it was easy to plug in the properties and get them done within the windows. I want to say we were close. I think you have to identify your properties within something kind of tight. I forget if it was 45 days or something like that. I think we were closed within 45 days.
That's great. Yeah. 45 days you have to close on those properties, you know, or to identify those properties. And then you have, I think, 180 days to close. So you have 45 days to identify and then 180 days, I believe, to close on the properties. So that 45-day window is incredibly important. But, of course, you don't want to close and sell your first house, your Aurora properties, before you have the 1031 exchange set up. And that's right. Why it's so important to talk with an actual 1031 exchange provider. We've had Lance Growth, who's been on our show. So we refer a lot of clients over to him because we've had great success with him. So what he'll do is – he'll set it up, and then once you close on the property, the money is escrowed to the business, to the 1031 exchange business. They hold that money until you've identified the properties. Then you close on those, you know, those package of properties that you're purchasing. And it's a great investment vehicle because you don't have to pay the capital gains.
Yeah. So the complication or the trick with our situation was we had conventional financing on both of those properties. With buying Morris Invest properties, you're not going to have great luck getting conventional financing before when you close on those houses. So we ended up having to do 401k loans to get that extra money. And then the money from the house that we sold, our old personal residence, right. We had to kind of wash those loans and bring all that cash in to, because you have to, for the 1031, you have to spend at least what you sell it for, minus commissions and fees.
Right, right. Well, that's great. So now you've got 15 doors, 12 actual physical properties. And what does your freedom number look like? Where do you, you know, are you still at your day job? And describe what you're doing day to day and how, you know, what your family structure looks like. Is this, has owning these 15 doors been, changed your life in any appreciable way?
I've been working in information technology for about 20 years, and I work hard. I work long hours. Ironically, I'm actually unemployed at the moment. I was laid off, so I've been taking the kids to school and being Mr. Mom, really thinking about this is kind of what it's like going to be like in retirement someday. So these properties have given me hope. Our freedom number, my wife and I, is 36 to do that. Now we could take time and let the profits grow to accomplish that number, or we could go kind of the Tom Wheelwright, Robert Kiyosaki, and use some debt to kind of leverage us to get there. So in my mind, our freedom number is closer to 60 with leverage, and then we just focus on paying down those loans once we get there.
Right, because as Robert Kiyosaki says, you know, debt is cash flow. Debt equals cash flow because we're not on the gold standard anymore. We're in a debt economy. And so when you're able to use debt, leverage debt, it creates, you know, creates income in your pocket. And that's the bottom line. So if you can do it creatively, taking some of these properties or leveraging your current home or, you know, bundling the properties together and doing a, you know, a refinance of some kind and then pulling that money out and being able to roll it into the next package of properties is, you know, using the 401k, all of the different metrics and, you know, tools that are available out there to you. So good stuff. So where do you go from here, my friend?
Well, we've been kind of like you suggested and you've talked about, we're using Andrew Howell to do our legal entities. And we talked about doing maybe 2 to 3 properties per. We decided on 3 just to have less moving parts. So when you do the 1031 exchange, you have to wait a certain amount of time to transition those properties into these new LLC entities that are created. So I wanted to get a track record. We're just in the process of moving those entities, those properties into the right entities, and then getting the corrected checking account entities set up for those. Once we get a track record of all that and the banking info looks good, I want to go to the bank, find a small Indianapolis bank to put debt on the properties. I'm not sure exactly where, something safe, maybe between 50% and 70% debt leveraged, and then just keep buying Morris Invest properties. And then my wife and I will just continue to not invest in the stock market, but, you know, put some money a month for that and just keep plugging in and using the income from those properties to help further that process as quickly as possible. Theoretically, so we're buying new Morris Invest properties cash, right? So I could go ahead and, so say we went from 15 doors to say 25 doors with leverage. At that point, the leverage would be on the first 15 doors. The next 10 doors would be, there would be no debt. And so I could potentially go refinance those again to get further, right? And so that's kind of the game plan, as well as continuing to invest our paychecks into Morris Invest.
Well, that's wonderful. And that's how they do it. You know, like I've talked about my friend Abe, who he started with one property. Now he's got thousands, and he's done it the exact same way that you just described. You know, it's the buying that property, placing a tenant, then putting leverage on that first property, rolling it into the second, third, fourth, and now he's got thousands. I think he owes over 2,000 properties. So that's how you do it. I mean, it's, you know, and like the gentleman I talked about yesterday, the retired millionaire landlord that I just mentioned, he only completed eighth grade. So, wow. You know, it's surprising not everyone's out there with a PhD in real estate investing. It doesn't take a PhD to become a millionaire real estate investor and to change your life. So, Jonathan, it's been a real treat having you here on the show and sharing your story. And thanks for letting us dive into some of the gritty details of how you got started and everything else. And my great thanks for having you here and being a part of the family. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Clayton.
And any new investor out there who's watching right now and who's maybe sitting on the fence and thinking about getting started with real estate investing, they've been, you know, trying to digest information for years, and they've just been sitting on their hands, and they're looking at their 401k thinking, oh, I'm just not getting any wealthier, and this is not going to help me and my family in retirement. What would you say to those people who are sitting on their hands?
You have to make a move. You have to do something. We made a move 10 years ago, and it was an okay move. I think the Morris Invest move way is certainly a whole lot easier, profitable, and they're not intimidating. A $40,000 single family home is not that intimidating.
Right. At the end of the day, what's going to happen? I always say, what, you know, as Thembi Beka said here on the show, what's the worst that can happen when you buy $45,000 properties? You know, is it going to go down to $0 in value? No, it's not a stock. So what's the worst that can happen? You know, right. You have a vacancy for a month, 2 months. Okay. That could happen. You could have an eviction. Yeah. You could, the house could burn down. Guess what? You have a $50,000 insurance policy. So you get a check for $50,000. So what really is the worst that can happen? I'm always struck by when people say, you know, real estate seems risky. It's like, really? And then you just have a conversation with people and ask them, where do they have their money right now? Do they have it in the stock market? That to me is 10 times riskier than real estate, wouldn't you say?
I would agree.
Yeah. Well, Jonathan, thank you so much for sharing your insight, your wisdom, and your experience from your family. I really appreciate you joining me. And from the crazy Colorado weather, what was it, like 70 degrees yesterday? And now it's what, 40?
Yeah.
40? Yeah, that's Colorado for you. Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Clayton.
And thanks to all of you for downloading and subscribing. If you haven't already subscribed, please do. And if you haven't left a kind review in the iTunes store, it really helps if you're listening to the audio version of this show to help other people discover the show. Maybe it might change their life a little bit. I don't know. I hope so. If you just leave a nice little 5-star review and write up a sentence or two, thank you so much if you do that. And we will see you back here on our next episode of Investing in Real Estate. Now, just like Jonathan did, he went out there, he took action a number of years ago. And guess what? He learned from that taking action, right? He has more clarity now that he actually took that action. He got in the arena. I have respect for people that get in the arena. Go out there, take action, get in the arena, and become a real estate investor. We'll see you next time, everyone.